Second and 10 from the 5. Darnold back to pass. Four-man rush. Sam looking to throw from the end zone. It's a safety and the game is over. Byron Young threw down Sam Darnold in the end zone. And it's a safety. There are no flags on the play. The Rams have taken a 30-20 lead.
Yeah, I think Darnold was yanked down by his face mask. And
I don't see a flag.
I don't think you're going to get it. That's not a play that you can review.
For now, Vikings Radio, thank you for the call. For now, you can't review it. After last night's game, that one's got to be squarely on the table. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. It was a great game last night. Things started to snowball a little against the Vikings, who lose to the Rams 30-20. But a controversial moment at the end of the game, Pearl, inside of 2 minutes, Vikings get the ball back again. They're down a touchdown and a two-point conversion. They're backed up in their shadow of their own end zone. Darnold into the end zone, a clear face mask that the officials all missed. And then 2 points, now it's a 10-point game, now the game's over.
What was more likely to happen if they'd called the penalty, that they drive 80 yards with a minute and no timeouts and score a touchdown, or that they lost 17 yards in three awful plays? Because, by the way, what was Darnold doing in the end zone on that play?
Well, where were they? It was second down, I believe, at their own 5 or something.
Right, but he was just hanging out, letting Darnold started, not getting rid of the ball and got some major sacks. And even that play, that was a terrible play by Darnold. It's, dude, you're in the end zone. You got to get rid of the ball with time running out.
You know that now. He lost his left tackle halftime.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm saying, they just did not look effective. I mean, I know they had a couple drives, but generally, I thought that game was over.
Yeah, see, this is where you and I will disagree about this. I hated the call because I wanted to see what the Vikings could have done. Yeah,
they would have lost 15 yards.
But here's the thing. I want to see if maybe you connect with Justin Jefferson on a big throw, which he had a really amazing catch in the second half, that we're going to be watching probably till the end of time, where he bobbles a catch on the sideline but still comes up with it kind of against his shoulder pad helmet situation.
Till the end of time?
I mean, we watched, Justin Jefferson's great catch in the comeback that they made in Buffalo. And that was a regular season game that a lot of people thought didn't mean a whole heck of a lot, but it's an unreal catch. They have these great weapons, and I know things were going against them in the second half, but that's not the way you want the game to end.
What's the other weapon?
Jordan Addison.
Dude, he is, first of all, he does nothing. How many yards did he have last night? And he had a key target at the end where he just fell down, and he's not great.
Aaron Jones.
Okay, a running back. Come on.
He catches the ball. He's really good with his hands. He only had 2 receptions last night, but he's a weapon.
They had to get 80 yards in a minute with no offensive line and Sam Darnold grasping for answers. I did not think that the Vikings were going to come back and win that game.
But now you're playing the result, not the process, right?
No.
Even if you don't think they were going to win, didn't you want to see them try? And the fact that the referees missed this face mask, and the reason was they said they were blocked on the play. But it's that's your job, is to be in the right position. And Darnold literally gets tackled by the face mask. His body is twisted going down. Right. What did they think it was?
But it was still the same thing was going to happen on the next play. The Rams, every time Darnold will drop back, the pass rush was on him immediately. And why would that have changed on the next drive?
Well, I just wanted a chance to see, because I don't know if maybe there's an encroachment by the defense. Maybe they get a cheap first down. Maybe they somehow keep this game alive. You got to call the game. It's in front of you. And I want to have sympathy for the referees. And I was an official, a baseball umpire, so I do have some empathy for them. But I just don't know what else they thought it was. Even if you can't see it, Byron Murphy, by the way, the official's right there. So the fact that he said he didn't see, as we're watching on the replay, Sam Darnold, even if you don't see the helmet, his shoulders, Perloff, basically go 180 degrees. He's spun down to the ground.
But the way you're talking about it, it makes it like the game came down to that call. That's what I'm hearing from you. And that's definitely not the game I watched last night. To say that game came down to that call, it doesn't feel anywhere near true to me.
Well, it wasn't a blowout. Even if the Rams were the better team in the second half, it was not a blowout. It was basically 2 chip shot field goals by the Vikings because they couldn't get in the end zone, but they did get into Rams territory. It was a tie game at halftime. It was a close game at the end, and you get the ball back. But credit to the Vikings, they actually came up with a big stop on the play on the drive before. I think they forced a 3-and-out. It was like a 5-and-out or something before.
The key play was, so the Vikings had to stop the Rams, but they without using their timeouts, and they couldn't because the Rams made this great play where Cooper Kupp came back to a Stafford ball. That was the key play of the game to me. And then the Rams forced him to use their timeouts. Unfortunately, they made it a little bit of a game because Cooper Kupp stepped on the sideline and killed the clock. But it still wasn't much of a game, in part because the Vikings were having an incredibly hard time protecting Sam Darnold.
Right.
And even on that play with the face mask, like, Darnold had to get rid of the ball. He was standing in the end zone. If that guy had just not reached for his face mask, he could have ended the game right there as well.
So, yeah, you're talking about the 3rd and 12. Cooper Kupp steps out of bounds and stops the clock with 1:46 left to go. And so that's where...
Then they punted. When they punted into... I'm like, okay, maybe we have a game. Then they punted down to the 3-yard line. I'm like, there's no way. The way the Vikings offense is playing right now, there's no way they're getting the length of the field with no timeouts.
It would have been hard. I'm not saying it would have been easy. It would have been hard. I just wanted to see it. And I think now you're going to have what they should probably call shorthand the Sam Darnold rule, which is... face mask needs to be reviewed.
Okay. I mean, I'm telling you, pass interference after 2018 was reviewed and people did not like it. I liked it, but other people hated it.
I get it, but isn't face mask to me a little more black and white, cut and dry than even pass interference, even more than catch, not a catch?
Okay. Let me paint a different scenario. What if it's not? So you're just saying face mask on the ball carrier?
Well, yeah. Yes, because aren't you allowed...
What about blocks or what if there are other plays where the hand gets up in the face? It has to be face mask on the... Like, how? What are we defining here? Just a personal...
personal foul face mask call.
Okay.
Because if you're the ball carrier, don't you get some grace to be able to put your hand out, right? Against the defensive player.
No, but if you touch his face mask, then
it's going to be called. I think all face mask. Again, to me, it's very cut and dry, where the hands, it's more cut and dry to me on catch, no catch, which is definitely reviewable. It's more cut and dry to me on spotting the ball, which is more cut. This is more cut and dry on all than all that.
It has to come from New York, right?
Well, so inside of 2 minutes, listen, this is the rule that already exists. They believe inside 2 minutes that... you know, challenges can be generated from New York.
Right.
There, you always have the replay assist. That's not just inside of 2 minutes. The NFL has given all these safety nets to the referees, and then all of a sudden, here on this very controversial play, you got nothing. And it's like, well, referees are human. It's like, well, we don't treat them like that for all these other plays. We have the safety net available for replay.
So let me ask you, what if it happened with 2 minutes and 20 seconds left?
I always thought 2 minutes was kind of weirdly arbitrary. I'll give you that. In basketball, it's weird, too, about the challenges and inside of 2 minutes. I think it's kind of silly. Yeah. But listen, if you want to make it 5 minutes, I'd be fine with that, too.
Yeah, I'm down with what you're saying. I just don't think that's the story of last night's game. I did not think the Vikings had a great chance of coming down the field. Like, almost no chance.
So the story of last night's game, if you want to rank them, is definitely the surprise return of Puka Nacua to this game. We did not know. We thought his practice window was open, but maybe he'd be back in a couple weeks. Instead, not only does he come back in the game, he has over 100 yards receiving in this game, and he was everywhere.
I would say I disagree again. I think the story of the game was that Cooper Kupp looked good because of the Cooper Kupp trade rumor. That to me, that's wild. Like, what's the first thing we said to each other this morning? They can't trade Cooper Kupp now.
Absolutely not.
But I don't know. But if he was on the market 4 days ago, what's changed? I mean...
Well, I think what changed is a big win over a, you know, first place Vikings team.
Yeah, I think they kind of knew they were going to get that win. I know that sounds weird. I think they knew the Vikings were in a tough spot. Like, the Vikings coming cross country on a Thursday night game, that was a real good opportunity to get a win. Honestly, or at least they should have been looking at it. Like, 3 days ago, like, just that win alone takes a Cooper Kupp trade off. So he was available, but now that they improved to 3-4, he's not available. It just seems odd to me.
Let's hear from Sean McVay clearing up the trade rumors about Cooper Kupp.
Teams reached out. Some of the things that I've seen out there, they're just not true. You know, we've addressed that with those individuals. Teams have called about him. And really, we let him know what the dialogue was there. And then there's a lot of stuff out there where there's not a lot of accountability to the reports. And that's unfortunate.
Okay, but, and I get that. I'm sure it's frustrating when things come out that aren't true, but what's materially not true here? People called. You're not saying that you didn't pick up the phone. You're not saying you didn't listen. And you said you kept Cooper Kupp in the loop, that maybe if someone does make a great offer, this could be on the table. So what materially did we all get wrong about this?
Yeah, I don't, it sounds like a coach is making up for something,
yeah,
right?
Trying to cover a little bit, or I don't know. Listen, I think we all thought it was a little bit odd that the Rams would be waving the white flag on the season.
Yeah, and by so now the way you say that, so now it's off the table? Like, it's,
great question. Did he actually say that, EJ? Yeah, let's hear cut six. Here's more from Sean McVay.
I don't think about those things. I think about coaching our team. You know, I think a lot of the things that were out there, speculation was exactly what that was, speculation. We're an inside-out organization. I'm really glad to have Cooper Kupp back with us, and that's what I expect to stay that way.
Okay, he expects to. I mean, he's still leaving the door open. What's an inside-out organization? What's that mean? Who's outside in?
The Cowboys.
The Cowboys, yeah, Jerry.
The Jets, Cowboys. Those are two teams I think about.
That they listen to the noise and then make decisions
definitely.
Based on
or,
that.
Or impacted by the noise outside, definitely.
Yeah, very interesting.
Well, yeah, but the Cowboys have clearly not been impacted enough by the noise.
They wish they'd listen to the fans.
Yeah,
this is one case where the noise would have helped out and they would have signed Derrick Henry.
Yesterday, you, Perloff, were a little bit down on the Vikings before this game.
Yeah, no, I think the Vikings were a thin 5-0. Were they 5-0?
They were 5-1. Now they're 5-2.
Right. Wait, were they... Yeah, no, but they were 5-0, right? Because they lost the Lions last week.
Yeah, they were 5-0.
Right.
They were 5-1 going into this
No,
game.
I thought they were a thin 5-0 even. They're a good team for sure, but Sam Darnold is, like, good, not great. Honestly, if I had to rank Goff, Love, Darnold, and Caleb Williams, I'd probably put Darnold where he is right now as third. I think he's behind Love. And behind Goff is in that offense. So I think the Vikings are the third team in that division. And I think that's playoffs. That's fine. I just don't see them really being a contender in the NFC. Is that way too harsh?
No, it's not.
And now with that Christian Darrisaw injury, that is huge. And we'll see how that left tackle, the whole game changed when he went down.
Yeah, he's one of the best left tackles, the highest paid left tackle, I believe, in all of the NFL. It was different when he left the game, no doubt about it. I think perhaps the bigger issue, not just the offense, but Brian Flores' defense has been kind of cooked over the last 2 weeks. Lions definitely. I mean, that was a shootout of a game. And then last night was both teams on fire on offense, came out, touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. It was a track meet. Then it slowed down a little bit with some adjustments. And ultimately, though, you know, the Vikings really couldn't hold them.
It just seems like there's certain quarterbacks and certain offenses that can handle Brian Flores' defense, and there's certain can't. We saw similar. Kyle Shanahan can't handle Steve Spagnuolo last week when San Francisco played Kansas City. I think it's matchup dependent. To me, yeah, the defense, they'll come back. They'll have some good games, but really the big question is that offense going to be able to outscore people? I just don't see the Sam Darnold thing lasting. I think he's good, not great.
855-212-4227. Adrian is in Maryland as a thought on the controversial no face mask call last night at the end of the Vikings-Rams game. Sam Darnold clearly got his face mask, you know, ripped, I don't know what you say, pulled by Byron Murphy. It was a no call. It was a safety, game over. Adrian, good morning, sir.
Hey, Maggie, 100% with you. This probably should be reviewed in the last 2 minutes. When a guy's head turns like that, you got to think something's up. Something's up. And the referee that calls roughing the passer, that's the only thing he looks at once the play starts is the quarterback. So he, some way he misses that is crazy.
Yeah.
So let me say my storyline. Here's the storyline. The Rams win. They take Cooper Kupp off the trading block now because the big bad 49ers are last in the NFC West. So anybody can win this division now. So it's up in the air. And as far as Minnesota, I mean, they're still a good team. They went to a two-game sprout. A lot of teams do that. So still can't put them dead and gone. They're still in it.
I agree, Adrian. Now, the question is going to be about, you know, with Sam Darnold has no time if this Darrisaw injury, if the offensive line gets shuffled, you lose your left tackle. Is Darnold a good enough quarterback to overcome it? And Adrian, yeah. Thanks for the call. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to hang up on you. But, you know, we saw Matthew Stafford last night. Obviously, Stafford has way more experience, is a way better quarterback than Darnold. But his offensive line, a little shaky. They got a lot of rookies on that offensive line, guys working their way back from injury. And what did Stafford do? Ball out just in 0.1 second, it felt like. He was getting rid of the ball and helping his offensive line. And to be honest, they had some bad false start penalties and stuff like that. You could tell they were getting frustrated at points during the game. And Stafford makes up for their deficiencies. I don't think Darnold can do that for his line.
You know, it's funny about the Vikings. If you look at the season, it feels like every game, I don't know if it's the first 15 plays or a script or something, they jump out like wildfire every game, and they slow down big time, and it's caught up to them. They honestly, they probably should have lost that game in London to the Jets. Again, they started off great, yep. And then the Jets kept chipping away. Green Bay, they were killing them. And then Green Bay kept chipping away. Last night, the first two drives, I'm like, oh my God, the Vikings are a juggernaut. And then it stopped. I was shocked that the Rams were good, had this soft zone against Justin Jefferson. And then obviously the Rams are like, well, we can't do this anymore. And they started focusing on him. So I just worry that the Vikings start off every game fast offensively, then it disappears. And now with the left tackle being hurt, that's a totally different calculus.
Adrian, our pal from Maryland, not wrong. If you looked at the standings today in the NFC West, we'll see. Got some tough games this weekend for Seattle and Arizona. They're both underdogs in their game. Seattle at home against the Bills and Arizona on the road against the Miami Dolphins. But Seahawks in first place, Arizona in second place, the Rams, then the 49ers. It is not what you are used to seeing, quite frankly, over the last couple of years in the NFC West.
And the Rams get the Seahawks next week with first place possibly on the line. That is going to be so fun.
Fun games. 855-212-4227. What'd you think of that face mask no call last night? Controversy. Did it impact the game to you? Perloff says, no, Vikings would have lost anyway. I want to see how it would have played out. William is in California answering a question we asked last hour. And the question was, who are you rooting for in the World Series? Obviously, if you're a Dodger fan or you're a Yankee fan, we know who you're rooting for. We're talking about the rest of us. William, what do you think, pal?
Well, I grew up a diehard Dodger fan in the Valley many years ago. And I was privy to see my Dodgers win World Series when I was still in grade school.
Yeah.
And the biggest moment of my life back then was my dad, who worked for a large pharmaceutical firm, he was an exec, got an extra ticket to the 66 World Series. And it was game two. And, I mean, other than getting married and having kids, it was the greatest moment of my life. And the games back then were played in the afternoon. And it was a warm afternoon, went to the game, go into the stadium. You could smell the tobacco, hear the barking of the vendors. You could hear Vin Scully on the transistor radio blaring. But it didn't end well. Dodgers lost that game. We had a center fielder that couldn't catch a ball. In the warm sun with all the white shirts in the crowd, and Koufax lost that game to a young guy named Jim Palmer. Mm. And everything was great, the buildup, getting slaps on the back at school, you know, for a week or so, and it didn't end well. And soon after that, Koufax retired. That was his last game. And then after I graduated from college, I was lucky enough to, I didn't go to the World Series, but got together with friends and unfortunately watched the Dodgers lose in 77 and 78 to those infamous New York Yankees and Reggie Jackson. But anyway, just brought up some cool memories. And, you know, I still got that program. And over the years, you know, when they had a meet and greets or whatever in L.A. and stuff, I got some signatures in there with Don Drysdale. You know, the thing about that time, though, the Orioles were a powerhouse hitting team. They had a triple crown winner named Frank Robinson. They had
we've heard of him.
And I mean, Brooks Robinson at third base. Yep. You had Boog Powell at first. But I mean, the point was they were a powerhouse. All the Dodgers had, we had two Hall of Fame pitchers and we had the best base runner in baseball. And we had a lot of mediocre hitters. But
this is an iconic matchup. And thank you for that and for the great memories going back to the 60s. The 66 World Series, you know, it's amazing. We're asking, is this the most iconic matchup we have in our country in sports? You know, this is as good as it gets. Perloff, you said Lakers-Celtics, you think, is just as iconic.
Most iconic championship matchup.
Yeah, championship.
Because we're not doing Duke-North Carolina basketball, Michigan-Ohio State football. I think, in my opinion, the most iconic matchup is Michigan-Ohio State, followed by Duke-North Carolina, followed by Lakers-Celtics. Then might have
Yankees,
some
Dodgers fourth on the list feels pretty low.
No, then you'd get into NFL rivalries. I think then you go like Bears, Packers, but those aren't World Series.
No.
I mean, because they're even bigger baseball rivalries in the sense like the, you know, Red Sox, Yankees, obviously number one.
Yeah. Dodgers, Giants. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of
But we're talking teams that can meet in the finals. So usually rivals are created by familiarity and being in the same division. It's rare. That's why you don't have a lot of championship series finals. I mean, rivalries. But yeah, this is so cool. EJ
and we got Duke, North Carolina in the Final Four a couple years ago. That was our first year doing the show.
I know, and that was an oddity.
Mm-hmm.
But the history, too, with the Brooklyn, New York, Brooklyn versus Yankees is awesome.
EJ, you look like you want to say something.
No, I keep thinking about this question. I still feel like seeing that Celtic green, that Lakers yellow on a court with a championship on the line, I still feel like is the championship for everybody. I feel like Yankees-Dodgers is big. I do think there's a portion of fans that will think Yankees-Giants, too, because of that background as well a little bit with the New York versus New York. It's great, and this is going to be a great World Series. I still think it's probably number two for me.
You know what's funny, too? And the Celtics and Lakers, like Magic and Bird only met three times, right? Or how many times did they meet?
Yeah,
the three
times. I mean, that's a lot, though. Three to a decade. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I also think maybe because we've had Celtics-Lakers a lot more recently than we've had Yankees-Dodgers. Like, we had Celtics-Lakers with Kobe.
Yeah, but that wasn't the same.
Too.
It's really about Magic and Bird.
It is, but again, we got another iteration of it in the 2000s.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Yankees-Dodgers since the 81 was the last time.
Yeah, I mean, there's generations of Celtics-Lakers, right? You got Jerry West losing a million times to Bill Russell, right? And then you have obviously the 80s where it was at its peak.
Yeah.
And then you did have those, you know, competitive series, one that went to Game 7 between Kobe Bryant and the Big Three.
Yeah.
So
Garnett, Pierce.
There's just, like, images I think people look at and they see it and, like, wow, like, that's the pinnacle of sports. With the Yankees-Dodgers, those images are, you know, a little more grainy, you know. Some of them in black and white, you know. So it's I just think for a lot of folks, it's not maybe quite as clear for especially younger audiences.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of give it to baseball because it's been around a lot longer than the NBA, and I think the Yankees are probably the crown jewel franchise in this country, along with the Dallas Cowboys. But the Yankees and the Dodgers are 1A.
But there's one thing about this that's different than Yankees-Dodgers. And there is some cultural things about this rivalry. But, I mean, the Boston-Los Angeles hits on a cultural level that is just so much deeper, I think, than Yankees-Dodgers, right? I mean, again, you had, you know, Magic Johnson, what a lot of America's seen as, you know, these flashy black stars up against the Boston Celtics, led by Larry Bird, white star, quote-unquote, fundamentally sound or whatever. Like, that alone kind of divided the country in many ways. And I think when we think of those two franchises, there's a lot of things thrown onto them.
Sure.
In terms of the cultural aspect. I think for the Yankees-Dodgers, they both seem like the haves, right? There is no, oh, who's the bad guy here? I mean, they're both
high payrolls.
High payrolls. Yeah. They're both flashy. Well, not flashy, but they're both, you know, big organizations.
855-212-4227. You can go vote on our poll. Who are you rooting for, Yankees or the Dodgers? World Series kicks off tonight. All right, coming up, got a lot more to do, including our pal Nick Costos, who joins us. Let's make some money, guys.
All right, sports fans, listen up. 1 in 8 men will be diagnosed with prostate cancer, and bladder leaks can be a side effect. That's why Depend is teaming up with the Prostate Cancer Foundation to encourage screening. Because health is a long game and it's yours to win. Now, here's the cool part. Through November, Depend is contributing up to $300,000 to prostate cancer research by donating 40 cents for every purchase of shields, guards, and RealFit products. Void in Mississippi. Learn more at Depend.com.
Let's make some money, shall we? Let's welcome in our pal Nick Costos. You better you bet. The host of BetQL. Nick, good morning. Congratulations to your Yankees. This has got to be a great time for you.
No, it's awesome. Well, until they lose, if they lose in the World Series. But yeah, it's awesome. Right now, it's great. Everything's in front of us. Hope springs eternal, and great to be on with you guys.
Love it. How are you betting the World Series?
I'm going to bet on my team, obviously. I try not to, and I want to win money with my bets, but I have to be honest with the audience, honest with myself. Like, I'm a sports fan, first and foremost. Like, I grew up loving the teams that I root for. I'm never going to bet against the Yankees in the World Series. I'm not going to do that. I do think it's a really, really evenly matched World Series, obviously. The betting market will tell you that. The Dodgers, like, the slightest of slight favorites in the series. The Dodgers have home field advantage. I do think the Yankees have the advantage with starting pitching. And the Dodgers have gotten away with it a couple times this postseason. That's not fair to say they've gotten away with it. I think they have three shutouts in bullpen games this year.
Yep.
And that's like an excellent job by Dave Roberts. Like, he's pushing the right buttons. The pitchers are pitching really well, obviously. I just don't think this is sustainable. It's one of the reasons why I lost money, candidly, betting the Padres in the NLDS and the Mets in the NLCS. I think the Yankees are primed, like, to slam this Dodgers bullpen in these bullpen games. Now, I will say, I do have a little bit of old man yelling and cloud at me right now at age 41. Because I asked some people yesterday, and I couldn't believe this. The Yankees gave Garrett Cole like $400 million, or $360 million a couple years ago, right? And I'm assuming, you know, like, series goes seven. You've got Garrett Cole, game one, game four, game seven. Like, this is the game we grew up watching, right? A stud starting pitcher goes three games in a seven-game series. And I was told by multiple people that I consider to be smart and that, like, they know that Cole would pitch games one and five and maybe come out of the pen in relief in game seven, which absolutely makes me physically ill if the Yankees wouldn't throw. I don't know why Garrett Cole exists, like, why he gets up in the morning if he's not going to pitch three times in the World Series. With that being said, though, I do give the Yankees a slight edge. Bet the Yankees in the series. I have them tonight, first five. I think the Yankees will get to Jack Flaherty early tonight. And a long shot bet on World Series MVP,
yeah,
Luke Weaver, Yankees closer, 200-1. And we had Tom Verducci on the show earlier this week, and he brought up how Anthony Volpe, and by all the Yankee haters can't wait for this, if Volpe wins when the Jeter comparisons start, that Volpe built for the big moment, 100-1, Anthony Volpe World Series MVP.
Wow.
If either of those guys wins MVP, I want my money back in this series.
Weaver, you can see the lane, right? Because if he closes four games, or if he closes game seven, it's possible that he's going to win MVP.
Well, like 1996, John Wetland won World Series MVP for the Yankees when they beat the Braves. In 2000, is Bogish there? He'll remember this. Mariano won World Series MVP in the Subway Series when my Yankees beat his Mets.
Yeah,
so there is precedent with this, with the Yankees in the World Series, with the closer winning World Series MVP.
Is Aaron Judge going to be good?
Well, he started to heat up at the end of the ALCS against the Guardians. So, yeah, I do think that he'll be good. I don't know if he's going to match Ohtani. Like, I think Ohtani's better than Judge's. Like, I don't even know if that's a hot take. I'm a Yankee fan saying that. So I think Judge will be good. I don't know if this is going to be like Barry Bonds. And I know the Giants lost that World Series, but Bonds in the 2002 World Series against the Angels, where he finally got there and they just nuked the baseball for seven games, and the Giants did lose that series in seven to the Angels. I don't know if you get that from Judge, but I think he'll be way better than what he was in, like, the ALDS against the Royals and in the past in other playoff series. You know, I think the Guardians did let him get hot a little bit, and I think Steven Vogt's intentional walk of Juan Soto to Judge late in that series maybe woke up the sleeping dragon a little bit. So I do think that Judge will hit well in this series.
Nick Costos, co-host and host of You Better You Bet, joins us right now. All right, let's get to a little college football before we get to the pros. And Nick, this is a big game. People are excited. Notre Dame and Navy from MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. Notre Dame, as I'm seeing now, is a 14-point favorite. The total, 51.5. If you were betting this game, how would you do it?
Yeah, I think, I don't want to say the value's gone on Notre Dame, but this number has been going up pretty consistently over the last couple of days. Like, this was 11.5, 12, 12.5, 13, 13.5, now sitting at 14. And Maggie, what I can say is I agree directionally with where the line is headed here. I think Navy can have some success, you know, early in this game against the Notre Dame defense, but Marcus Freeman has been saying it at his press conferences all week, and he's been saying it for a while, that Notre Dame has been preparing for, like, the Navy, like, option rushing attack here. I don't think anything is going to take Notre Dame by surprise in this game. And while a lot of people will focus on, like, the Navy offense versus the Notre Dame defense, I want someone to tell me how Navy's defense is stopping Notre Dame's run game and stopping the Notre Dame offense. Like, 14 feels like we're probably at a right point right now. Like, the point spread's probably okay. I would never bet Navy in the game. I would need, like, 17 to bet Navy. I would only bet Notre Dame, but I think there were better numbers to bet earlier in the week.
All right, Nick, going to the NFL. There's so many interesting games. Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs get DeAndre Hopkins, and the Raiders have these Jordan rules for Mahomes.
I'm upset with you. Perloff. Like, your team
added to the list.
your team stuffed my team in a locker. You put us upside down and put us in a toilet bowl and flushed it. You gave us a swirly. I get no crap from you as a Giants fan after last week.
I don't take the Giants seriously.
I'll tell you what. That's good.
I actually had a question. Good. Well,
can I tell you the real reason why? It's because Perloff, he will love talking smack to anybody, but you don't believe in these Eagles.
I don't think the Eagles are very good.
That's
I was actually going to ask, I saw our friend Greg Cosell go in depth on a couple shows about how Jalen Hurts is playing bad football. That made me really nervous. And that's like, I'm on about a million text threads like you are, Nick. My friends are really down on Jalen Hurts right now. Are the Eagles, is he bad? Is that a thing now?
What do you do with the Eagles going to Cincinnati?
Yeah.
Because right now, Cincinnati, a 3-point favorite in that game, but yeah. I wouldn't know how to bet that game.
I just like how Perloff assumes I'm on a million text threads. All the text threads I'm on are muted, and I don't participate in any of them. To the point that I think I need to have a con. I think like I'm like a bad friend and like a bad family member, honestly. I like shut off during football season. I don't know if Hurts is playing poorly. I think this offense is stupid for him. Like Kellen Moore is running like the Cowboys offense and the Chargers offense, and Jalen Hurts is not Dak Prescott or Justin Herbert, which is not an insult. He's a different player than those guys. Like if Steichen were still in charge, I think Hurts would be playing awesome. Look, you don't stand toe to toe in a Super Bowl against Patrick Mahomes and you're bad. Like there's no way he's bad.
Kind of seems like that's what
I think
happening.
They're poorly coached. I think they're poorly coached.
Yeah, I agree with that. But meanwhile, this game. Like the Bengals are so desperate. We talked about.
I do like Cincinnati.
Yeah, like Cincinnati needs this one at home so bad. Maggie, you're right. I'm down on the Eagles. She's way worse with the Bills. You want to get off a text from Maggie? She thinks the Bills are going to lose every single game.
Well, Maggie has like Stockholm syndrome with the Bills. This has been going on for a really long time. Like I certainly understand where she's coming from with this. Let's listen. Like you've been watching them lose for like your entire life. I certainly understand where you're coming from.
See, Nick Costos gets it. Why don't you get it, Perloff? You sit next to me every day. Nick Costos joining us from You Better You Bet. Sorry, Perloff. You were about to ask about the Kansas City.
Yeah, about Mahomes. Is Kansas City capable of blowing somebody out this year?
No, I don't think so. Not yet, at least. Not until DeAndre Hopkins gets up to speed in this offense. And I did love that trade for DeAndre Hopkins. To me, this game, the Chiefs and the Raiders, and I know what you were saying, Perloff, with the Jordan rules with Mahomes and the way the Raiders kind of physically bullied him in that game on Christmas last year in that huge upset with Aiden O'Connell starting. Minshew will start this game. To me, this game is a lot less about Kansas City and way more about the Raiders and why I bet the Raiders in this game. And I took 10 with the Raiders. Now we're sitting at 9.5. I agree with that move off of 10. So the reason why I like the Raiders, and we should all pray to the patron saints of covering big point spreads, Antonio Pierce. Because Antonio Pierce, let me tell you something. You got an 8-point game. Antonio Pierce is like aroused by the idea of making it a 5-point game.
He will kick a field goal that will do absolutely nothing except for bettors.
Like you've got 4th and 2 at the opposing 43, and like you're worried as a bettor, like if I don't get this, the other team's gonna come down and score. Don't worry. Antonio Pierce is trying to pin that team inside the 5 to start their offensive possession. We've seen it twice this year. Week 2 against the Ravens, they won the game outright. We had the Raiders in that game, and we saw it last week against the LA Rams in like ridiculous fashion. Kicks the field goal 20-12 to make it 20-15. Like what a clown! Also, if you bet them, like you love him, yeah. Like this is the ultimate coach to bet on when you're getting points because he loves to kick. Like he's not trying to win. That's what it feels like. Feels like he's like trying not to lose by a lot. So yeah, at 10, it's a pretty easy bet. Pride and poise, commitment to excellence. Just cover, baby. Give me the Raiders.
I'm sure that's what Al Davis was talking about. It's funny, in Las Vegas, like, can they launch an investigation on this? Because either he doesn't know math, or
he's just dumb.
There's something going on.
He's just dumb.
Nick Costos joining us. Okay, this is one that people are going to have their eyes on before we get to your upset pick of the week. You got the Cowboys and the 49ers. I doubt this is your upset pick of the week, but maybe. You got the 49ers super banged up. You got the Cowboys just not that great. Big game for both teams. How are you betting it?
Yeah, I think that there's been pretty interesting line movement in this game this week. San Francisco earlier in the week was as high as a 6.5-point home. It's a huge difference between 4 and 6.5 numerically. It might have been on Monday. Kyle Shanahan had his press conference the day after the game on Sunday, the loss to Kansas City, and said Deebo Samuel's in the hospital with pneumonia. George Kittle has a sprained foot. Christian McCaffrey's not going to be back for a couple weeks. And the betting market went nuts betting the Cowboys. And that's how we've arrived at this point now all the way down to 4. But we got news yesterday from Adam Schefter that Micah Parsons is unlikely to play in this game coming out of the bye with his ankle injury. It feels like, and today is Friday, right? Shout out to me, the calendar. the final day of injury reports, right, for the games on Sunday. I think Kittle's going to play. There was a report yesterday that Debo might play in the game. And if all of those things happen in concert, I think the 49ers are the valuable side in the game. Now, you can't bet this until we get more clarity on injury stuff, which is not a fun answer, I understand, but I'm trying to give the best betting information. There's too much still out there that has to be determined as to who's playing in the game to give out a bet. I will say that the side I'm looking towards betting right now is San Francisco, if I can get the sequence of events that I want and the players playing in the game.
Didn't even bring up the fact that the Cowboys kicker is serving jury duty right now on a felony strangulation case.
He'll be back.
So it throws off the routine. All right, let's get to Nick's upset pick of the week. Hit the music. All right, Nick, give us a winner.
Okay. Upset pick of the week. You know what? You know, sometimes I'm like, I give you guys like a 2-point. I'm going to give you guys a huge underdog this week to win outright. Everyone's talking this week about Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens, and that Lamar is about to win his third MVP and his second in a row. But everyone has failed to realize that in Cleveland, we have a franchise reborn. We have a quarterback that is not, I don't care about the boot him. We have a quarterback that everyone hated and also was the worst starting quarterback in the league by any objective measurement. He's out for the season. And in steps, famous Jameis Winston. And Ken Dorsey, Maggie's best friend, now calling the plays for the Cleveland Browns. Going to spread it out and throw all over this Ravens secondary. I will say that this is kind of like, Browns are either going to lose this game by 30 because Jameis is going to throw 3 pick sixes, or they're going to win the game outright. I bet the Browns plus the points. I think the Browns are going to win on Sunday at home against the Baltimore Ravens.
Wow. You're right about there's only two ways this can go. It's either a horrible loss that is just an even further embarrassment for the Browns.
Or they win.
Or they win and they're live.
Or they just win.
Yeah. Nick,
I saw that. It's a lean into variance and take a huge price.
Why'd the number come down so? I just saw it at 8 points. Didn't it open 9.5?
Well, so open 10. The number was, yeah, this is where people say like Vegas, like all Vegas knows, really? Why'd they open 10? Stupid number. Not even close. Because this is the right number in the game. Honestly, I think 7's the right number in the game.
So nothing's like actually Browns, changed. Nothing. There's no player movement except for Jameis. Really.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, a couple things. Like the Ravens, we just saw them in primetime. They destroyed Tampa. Yeah. Lamar and Derrick Henry are getting, and correctly, all the publicity that they're getting. And Cleveland's been a dumpster fire this season. Yeah. You can understand why there's like interest early in the week on the Ravens. But like, I'll just encourage people to think about things like this. You know, the Browns in week one were a home favorite against the Dallas Cowboys. Like they were thought like they were going to be pretty good. Like not a ton has changed with the personnel of this team now, other than the worst quarterback in the league is now no longer the quarterback. So now you get them going from favored at home against the Cowboys to now almost a 10-point home underdog against Baltimore. Like, I'm not saying they should be favored. I'm just saying, like, 10's a little nuts. I actually think 7. I would bet the Browns down to plus 7.5. Not
Nick,
7.
Nick Kostos, you better you bet. It's a must-watch and a must-listen. Nick, thank you for your expertise, and good luck to your Yankees.
Yeah, good luck.
Do you mean that or no?
No, I'm rooting for the Dodgers.
What a jerk, man. All right. Wishing everyone minimal sweats. Hold on. I'm wishing everybody, including my friend Andrew Perloff, minimal sweats, winning bets, and the absolute very best of luck.
Yeah, had to get that Yankee hat on. Thank you, Nick. Appreciate it.
You got it.
Nick Kostos, you better you bet. Yeah, you did not take an opportunity to really, you know, brag a little bit about your Eagles over Nick's Giants.
Is beating the Giants really reason to brag in today's NFL?
I mean, I've seen you take lesser instances to brag on things.
By the way, if Anthony Volpe comes away with the World Series MVP, then then Nick's a genius, because I do not see that happening.
No, kid went to high school about 10 minutes away from where I live. 855-212-4227. Lots more to do, including a robust game of fact or fiction. We do that next. Welcome back. If you missed any part of our interview with Nick Kostos, who joins us every Friday from You Better You Bet, you can always download the Maggie and Perloff podcast wherever you get your pods. 5-star reviews are very much appreciated, or you can hit the rewind function on the free Odyssey app. Andrew Bogish has headlines for us. Good morning, Bogues.
Guys, good morning again. So the Vikings almost lost to the Jets in London. They did lose to the Lions on Sunday and then to the Rams last night in L.A. So they are 5-2 right now. Head coach Kevin O'Connell has some work to do over their mini bye.
We get, you know, the benefit of some time, but we've got to use it the right way. We've got to make sure we're doing everything we can collectively as an organization to make sure we're moving forward positive and just try to get a win next week against the Colts team at US Bank Stadium.
His Vikes found the end zone in their first two possessions of Thursday Night Football, but only 6 points after that, losing to the Rams 30-20. Part of the problem was losing stud left tackle Christian Darrisaw to a left knee injury just before halftime. Also a problem was the Rams' offense getting healthier than expected. Puka Nacua joining Cooper Kupp and returning from injury. They combined for 12 catches, 157 yards, and a touchdown. Matthew Stafford with four TD passes total.
I mean, obviously they played great. They had production, but, you know, it's just great energy to have those guys back. Not only the guys on offense, but the guys on defense feel that too, right? They know that we got some of those guys back, and I thought it was a great team effort. Obviously our defense clinching it there for us late, but the guys on offense did a nice job too.
The Rams defense did score the final points of the game, a safety with 96 seconds left, but that's the play where the ref missed a face mask of Sam Darnold. The Pitt defense had three pick sixes last night. The 19th-ranked Panthers, a 41-13 rout of Syracuse. Pitt is 7-0 for the first time in 42 seasons. The Dallas Mavericks 1-0 with their new big three.
Doncic. Left off of Lively, keeps the dribble at the left elbow. Back out, Clay. Puts it on the floor for a 10 a.m. three. You cannot give him 15 feet of space. That's embarrassing.
15, he had 20. He had time to dribble, take a breath, have a cup of coffee.
Mavs radio enjoying the 120-109 win over the Spurs. Clay scored 22 with six threes. Luka Doncic, 28 points, 10 boards, 8 assists. The Celtics are 2-0 after a 122-102 win in Washington. And Chet Holmgren, still somehow a rookie, opened his season with 25 points, 14 rebounds, 5 assists, and 4 blocks in the Thunder's 102-87 win in Denver. And how about this NBA story? A former strength and conditioning coach is suing the Clippers and Lawrence Frank for wrongful termination. Randy Shelton says the team fired him after he questioned how Kawhi Leonard's injuries and overall health were being managed. Shelton and Kawhi were together at San Diego State. This suit says the Clippers began contacting him in 2017 when Leonard was playing in San Antonio trying to get inside injury info on the player. Then the Clips hired Shelton in 2019 as they tried to get Kawhi to sign with them. The Clippers say Shelton's allegations have already been investigated and deemed without merit. He was paid in full when he was let go.
Yeah, a couple things. One, the guy's alleging that the Clippers were tampering with Kawhi Leonard for a long, long time.
Years, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess that's just sort of spilling the tea or the dirty laundry or what have you. And then this one is that they weren't handling Kawhi correctly. And I think Kawhi's gotten a lot of flack over the years for, A, how he handled the Spurs exit because he didn't, like, trust the team doctors, more or less. So I'm kind of paraphrase what happened there. And now it looks like the Clippers may be, according to this guy, this trainer, responsible for all the subsequent, for a lot of the subsequent injuries that he's had because they forced him to play when he wasn't ready.
What was striking to me, and I read this and I'm like, wow, Kawhi Leonard's career is over, because this guy in this article, in this lawsuit, claimed that he told the Clippers that Kawhi needed at least 700 days to recover from his ACL meniscus, whatever he had injury. And he came back, obviously, in like 300 whatever.
Yeah.
But if you're talking about a guy that needed 2 years of recovery of not playing, and then the Clippers apparently said, well, we can manage the injury once he comes back. Kawhi is cooked, and I feel terrible. And some of the narrative about him being lazy or stealing money, I mean, the guy, he has a degenerative knee condition, clearly.
Why did they pay him again? That's my question. I know
that stadium, that arena. That's the only reason.
Who? I love Kawhi Leonard. I love watching him. Is he that type of draw? I'm going to be honest. Most people know him now as the face of load management. We are far away from the Raptors championship and from the Spurs MVP the finals.
He's a local guy, so maybe there's some of that. Mm. But you
so was
feel
Paul
like,
George.
Yeah,
they didn't pay him.
I kind of wonder if they chose the wrong guy.
He's hurt.
I mean, he doesn't have a degenerative knee thing, though. I mean,
there's no younger person from L.A. that they could have gotten to try to sell the stadium a little.
That being said, I mean, I would hope Kawhi came loose one day for nothing, for cheap. That dude can win championships someday.
Still, no.
Oh, no.
I mean, someday, take 3 years off, come back, Bob McAdoo with the Lakers side. I don't know. I'm just saying he's a great, great player. So boring to watch, but great.
Let's be honest. The biggest draw for that stadium is obviously the bathrooms.
Can't wait to see them.
And the wall.
and the wall.
And the outside baskets, too.
Coming up next, we got to make picks.